saw a sheet of fire cross over the tent. And he said, jump. And I thought the man was wild. And I said to him, you stink.
Episode 13.
You are listening to Talking About Everything with Harry Hawk.
Hello, my name is Harry Hawk, and we're in downtown Chicago. We're at the Western Hotel, and we are here with my mom, Judith. Mom, why don't you say hello?
Hello.
Absolutely great. Why don't you tell everybody where you were born?
I was born in Hartford, Connecticut.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up next door in Bloomfield, Connecticut.
And just to kind of set the tone and the context, let's tell everybody a little bit about what Bloomfield was like when you were growing up.
When I was growing up, we had a butcher downtown Bloomfield, and my mother would go to the butcher, and he was missing teeth, and the teeth he had were ugly, and he was literally cutting the animals for people, and there was sawdust on the floor. And his name was Mr. Webster. How I can remember that, I don't know. Bloomfield was a dairy town. There were dairy farms all over the town. Cows had free rein. They walked and ate and spent their days in the pastures. It was just a small town, and it was during the war. The war started when I was 4.
What year were you born?
I was born in 37.
And so you're talking about World War II?
I'm talking about World War II. And the war started in a December, cold December day. And the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, and my parents were so struck by that information. And so they were so struck. I don't know how else to describe it. And so was I. 4 years old, I was aware when they were so affected by that.
Did your family have a bomb shelter?
No, we didn't have a bomb shelter, but there was a little closet, maybe 6 feet by 10 feet, in the basement. From that closet, there was a crawl space under the outside steps to enable one to come into the cellar. From the outside, there was a crawl space under that, and my father took me down there, and he said, if there ever we get the bombs here, crawl under there. It wasn't big enough for the whole family, but I could have crawled in.
Can you tell everybody a little bit about the neighbors and the neighborhood where you were growing up?
The neighborhood was small. We were clustered on a little hill, and across the street was our very best friend, Jimmy Janes. His real name was Harold Abraham Lincoln Janes, and he was so listed in the phone book. He went by Jimmy, we called him. And there were Petersons across the street and other Petersons across the street, and they were the dairy farm people. Then there were others, a few other neighbors. Do you want their names?
Whatever you can recollect.
Well, the Radens were 2 doors down, and they were Jewish. They were the only other Jewish people. And they had a black-haired Sheldon and a blonde, brown-haired Elaine and a red-haired Lois, because Sam Raden was red-haired. And they were very nice people. After the war, the Beemans came in and moved in. And after the war, the Dressers moved in across from one of the Petersons, and on the other side of us. But we had empty lots on both sides of our house, and it was empty across the street because my father sold one half of the lot to Jimmy Janes and one half of the lot to Ray Peterson, with the agreement that they would only each own a half of the lot, and nothing would be built there to block our view, my father's view, from our house. That's pretty much it for the neighbors then when I was little.
You had a very large backyard?
Oh, I don't think it could be called a yard. We had 1, 2, 3, 4 houses, 4, maybe 5 houses, each on a separate lot, later moved in our backyard. That's how large it was. We had a baseball field there and just fields and a lot of mowed lawn, which later, my father sold these lots off.
Well, I can add a little context. Grandpa had bought about 100 acres, I believe from the Petersons originally, but from certainly one of the local farmers, and eventually sold off a lot of that land. But the area behind the house was large enough to have, what you said, a baseball field. What else was part of the direct?
Just fields. And then it connected on the other side with Tunksis Avenue.
You didn't have a barbecue area? Or?
Oh, yeah. That was the immediate backyard.
That's what we're talking about.
There was a fireplace that my father built out of bricks from a design that he saw. A special fireplace with places to stock the wood.
Was it a fireplace or did it have a grill on it?
It had a grill on it. It had a grill on it and an oven door underneath it if you wanted to put something underneath the grill. And my father then planted a cherry tree near where the fireplace was later built. He had a plum tree. Apple trees were there. Black raspberries were there. And so he had
and some peach trees.
I'm trying to think where the peach trees were. I can't picture them, but I can picture the fig tree that used to attract every Japanese beetle in Connecticut, and he tried to cover it with a mesh, but the Japanese beetles got in anyway. Finally, he chopped down the fig tree because we had too many bugs. The cherry tree was tall and sturdy, and my grandfather at one point took this very large and heavy picnic bench with the chairs attached that my father had built, and he pulled it. It was very heavy. I don't know how he did it. My grandfather Cohen was very little. He pulled it under the cherry tree, and then he put the step ladder on top of the picnic table, and then he climbed up and picked cherries. And my father came home and saw him up there, and he bellowed at his father for doing such a dangerous thing. And that was the end. Oh, we also had grapevines. We had a long seat separating the kitchen door from the side of the house. Fieldstone fences all around. But that was where we had the grape arbor, and there were grapes. They planted a lot of trees. They planted dogwood trees and willow tree that grew very large because it was next to my little swimming pool that my father built. And every day we had to drain the water. It was not very large. And he said to drain it every night to get clean water in the morning. That willow tree finally grew so large so quickly that they had to chop that down. And when he, at some point, I don't know what went wrong with the cherry tree, but he chopped that down. And he gave the wood to his friend, who I'm not remembering his name, was going to later make something for my father out of our own cherry tree, cherry wood. But that never happened. That never evolved.
Now, I'm trying to remember some other things about your life. And I think you were talking about the Janes across the street. And now I'm remembering about the circus fire.
Oy.
Is that something you'd like to talk about?
I'll talk about the outlines of that. Jimmy was taking his two boys, Kippy and Philly, and he invited Johnny Peterson, who was Kippy's best buddy, also my best buddy, and he invited Sheldon Radin, and he invited me. So there were four boys and myself and little Philly, who was about three, and he drove us off to the circus. We found seats up in the bleachers, and I sat on Jimmy's right, and the boys all sat on his left. We were segregated by sex. I was sitting there. I don't know if I was wearing... No, I wasn't wearing my glasses, because I didn't have glasses then. It wasn't until... No, I did have glasses then. I had only had them for a couple of months at that point. I was having a hard time seeing what was happening. And I looked over to the right, and I saw a sheet of fire cross over that entrance to the tent. We were sitting under the tent, inside the tent. And I nudged Jimmy in his arm, and I said, "Look, there's a fire. And he didn't pay any attention, as if he didn't hear me. He probably didn't hear me. So then I looked down in front, and they were doing something with lions or tigers, lions, I think. And they were letting them out, bringing them in. I was having trouble seeing. And I was staring at them. They had cages set up in a long row to let them out into the ring, into the circus ring. Then I was just sitting and watching. I looked around, and I'm the only one sitting there. I was all alone. No one else was there. And so I was looking down again, trying to, something was happening in front of me by those cages. And I, all of a sudden, Jimmy was yelling at me, and he ran down the steps and yanked me up to the top of the steps, to the highest level. And he said, "Jump!" And I thought the man was wild. And then at that point, Kippy and Johnny slid down the pole. And I thought, they are, boys are so good at that sort of thing. I could never do that. And then Sheldon was next to me, and he said, "Jump." So Sheldon jumped. And then he held Philly in his arms, and he said to me, "Jump." He was just roaring at me to jump. And I, no way I'm jumping down there. So he pushed me. And in clearing the way so people could get up to the top and jump, he had thrown all of the wooden chairs, not all, many of them, thrown them over the top. So there's room for people to run up and jump off. So when I landed on one of those chairs, and I still remember the leg of the chair hit my left thigh, and I just was sort of stunned, and I was mad at Jimmy, and I just sort of stayed there. And he said, "Get up, get up." And he had jumped down with Philly in his arms. I saw them at one point jumping or land. No, I didn't see them land. Saw them jumping. He gathered us together. So it was Philly and Sheldon and me, and Kippy and Johnny were missing. So he took us over to the edge of the field where the tent was set up, and he stood Sheldon and me next to each other. I was 6, Sheldon was 7, and he put little Philly in front of us and said, "Don't move. Don't move at all. Don't move. Don't move anything. Stand still here." And then he ran off. He was looking for Kippy and Johnny, and he searched through 2 of the fields nearby where people had parked their cars, and he found that the boys had found his own car, and they were waiting at his car. Meanwhile, we're standing, and I'm holding Philip straight right in front of me, and the flames had caught the roots of the tree that were above ground, and it was at the edge of Philly's sneaker, and I didn't know whether I should move his foot away from the flame or not move. Sometimes grown-ups can give strange directions to little kids. And as I was staring at that and thinking, what should I do, Jimmy came back and he grabbed Philly away from the flame, and he said to us, follow me. And he walked along the side. I followed him. The side of the circus, and there were hoses on the ground, and there were firemen. I don't clearly remember the fire trucks, but there was a large platform next to the tent between me and the tent, and it was filled with red meat. And I said to whom, Shelley, Jimmy, I don't know who I said it to, I said, "Look, there's food for the animals." Today, I don't know if that was food for the animals or burnt bodies that had been collected and placed on that area. It looked like a platform, like a stage. It seems like an awful lot of meat for the animals, but maybe it was. I don't know. I suspect it was dead bodies. And then we kept walking, and the fireman scolded me. "You're not supposed to walk here." Well, we're still trying to get out of the fire. Although most people, I guess it was belated, most of the people had already left or been killed. And so we got to the parking lot where Jimmy's car was, and we all piled in. And then all of a sudden he saw Dolores and her boyfriend, Dolores Peterson, from across the street. And he called to them, and the 2 of them joined us. So now it was 7 kids. And somebody was sitting on my legs, and I complained, and Jimmy said something sharp so that I shouldn't complain, because he got all 7 children from the neighborhood. And he drove home, And he drove up Terry Plains Road. The mothers were gathered. Dolores's stepmother, Marion, and Susan, and my mother was somewhere around there. I don't remember. She was not with the women, but she was somewhere nearby. All the mothers ran and got their kids, and it was all very exciting. And Jimmy sat down on the doorstep of their front door, and he was filthy, sweaty, with filthy from the fire. All the mothers were hugging their kids, but my mother didn't hug me. And then Jimmy said, "Come here." And I went to him, and he hugged me, and I was so pleased to get a hug. And I said to him, "You stink," because he did. He stunk of the fire and his sweat. And my mother said, "Don't say that." And she grabbed me and took me away and brought me across the street home. And then I sat, we were under the apple tree next to the porch, and I sat in a chair and she sat in a chair opposite me. And we just sat there. We didn't talk. And the phone rang, and she said, "Your father has been calling." And she ran into the house, and it had been my father. This time she was able to say, "Judy was saved. She's here." And the only thing I can add, well, no, the next day I got up, and I don't remember the rest of that day, but the next day I woke up, opened my closet door, and my mother had hung my yellow pinafore in the closet, the yellow pinafore that I wore that day to the fire. And it stunk of the fire, and I shrieked, and I just stood there and shrieked, and she came running up and said, "What's the matter?" And I couldn't talk. I pointed at the pinafore, and I said, I couldn't speak. I just exploded. And then at something, I said something about get rid of it. I don't remember what I said. And she said, "You don't want it?" I said, "No." And she took it away. So that was gone. And later, a book was written by Henry Cohen, and he talks about seeing the little girl in the yellow pinafore. He was searching for his mother. He was walking along the highest seats, walking around the tent looking for his mother, and he saw this little girl in the yellow pinafore, and that was me. What else do I remember? Oh, this was the end of the summer. This is in regard to the next a couple of days later, second grade started.
Well, I think I'd like to stop here if we can.
There's just one more little thing. The second grade teacher said, "There's a new boy. His name is Skippy. He's with us. He was in the circus fire. And Kippy and Johnny and me and a couple of other kids raised their hands and jumped. We were jumping all over our seats saying, 'We were too, we were too, we were too.'" And the teacher was so surprised she didn't know that Skippy was the only one who had been in the fire. And that was the last that was said of it in the classroom.
All right. Well, thank you very much. I'd like to stop here. And we have a busy day ahead of us, but hopefully we'll get to talk again. Why don't you say goodbye?
Goodbye.
Conversations, interviews, rants, and discussions about society, technology, food, art, culture, games, music, education, business, community building and marketing, communications, board games, old science, new cars, body piercing, body painting, competitive eaters, zombies and vampires, and more. You're listening to Talking About Everything with Harry Hawk. Powered by Krieger Wave. My name is Chuck Fresh, and I am being paid to thank you for listening to Talking About Everything with Harry Hawk. Harry wants to hear from you on Twitter at HHawk or HarryHawk@gmail.com. This podcast is sponsored by Hawk Digital Marketing. Hawk Digital Marketing is focused on bringing brands and people together. We build communities of interest based on trust and transparency, where consumers and brands can converse, learn, discuss, or solve problems together. We build awareness for your brand while creating a long-term connection, entanglement, between you and your customers. Once connected, we help you engage, communicate, sell, present, educate, and inform. Evolve your communications with us. Visit their website, hawksocialmarketing.com.
This is Harry Hawk saying, have a great week. Bye-bye.